Hi, I'm Josh, and spider, 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 holy shit, that's a lot of spiders. Spider, 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 spider. Look, they can't all be winners.
Look out, it's a spider.
Okay. Hi, I'm Matt, and The Stranger as a title reminded me of the, do we want to call it an urban legend, or do people, someone does this, the stranger being the sex act of like sitting on your hand until it goes numb and then jerking off, because then it feels like someone else is doing it. And It occurred to me while I was like looking for The Stranger online, and then thinking about how that's probably just like one of those silly things people make up, and then, but no, probably someone's done that. And then I sat there going, I got a lot of free time.
Only a turtle, total pervert would do that. No, yeah. I think it's great. Shut up, little hand puppet.
Meanwhile, Matt's feverishly looking through videos on Quibi on a Zune. this is Charlie. This is Charlie down in Austin. I don't know. I kept trying to think of something clever for tunnel, and then I kept trying to think of like Australian slang, and then I was like, "Well, like root," and I was like, "Nope, different thing." And I was like, "Nope, that's you know, kind of back that off of there." Like, okay, and I was like, "Tunnel," like, "Do I want to look that up?" But I was like, "I don't want to look that up," so I'm like, "It's not gonna happen." So, you know, insert double entendre Australian joke here,
and we're gonna Billy a bong here. Because we're from Boston, and this is Horace the Hot Dog. So first up, we had a short called Bug. And this is another pleasantly short, although it is really well written and directed, so it doesn't feel like a quick gotcha kind of short at all. But a woman comes to the home of the lady who she's providing like senior healthcare to, and can't find her, wanders around looking for her. There's ominously spilled noodles on the ground. She drinks a glass of water and then gets an alert on her phone. Don't drink the water because North Korea has done a chemical attack. And then she finds out that, whatever was in the water just makes all of your insides levitate out of your body in a big old blob. And that's it.
Yeah, that was, that certainly gets your attention. It's like she see her face, she's like, oh, it's gotta be something. And you see what it is, and your body goes, well, we weren't prepared for that, were we?
No, just like all of the guts and like a floating orb above her back having kind of like ripped their way out. But why are they hovering? We don't know.
Who can say?
The power of communism.
yeah, sure.
So is this? And I did not have enough time to do poking around to find out. So is this? This is part of like a series. Is this like a?
Yeah, this is on a very specific to do list for me because it's sort of like the nearest I've been able to suss out from my quick kind of dive into that is that the. It's kind of like the Black Milk Studio thing is doing like almost like a 1001 Arabian Nights type thing where it's just like a ton of little short films. I don't know that there's anything that is an overarching theme or anything that ties them together. I have it all bookmarked so that I can just like spend an hour kind of digging through it and sort of seeing what the deal is there. And let's say by next episode, I'll come back with enough info for us to know if we should just go like, what if we just watched a fuck ton of shorts one week? Or if we will just kind of pick and choose from them here and there. Yeah.
It's been since the last ABCs of Death, I think, that we had one that was like, yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see. Like, but I think there may just be like literally like a bajillion of them. Literally a bajillion. Literally almost roughly estimating a bajillion. That's in not metric, it's freedom units,
give or take but, two.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know, there's like something else going on there. I want to look into that more, but that one I think I got through one of the various short film things I'm subscribed to, so I was pretty thrilled with it because I was like, hey, look at this being a thing that doesn't play out like much we watched before. So had like a sort of a pacing and what would you call it? I guess it has like the pacing and sensibilities of a feature in a way that you don't often see in shorts. Shorts can often seem kind of breathless and maybe a little thirsty. And this just felt like it was telling this very quiet, slow thing that was going to take all the time in the world and breathe despite only being 4 minutes. And it was just an interesting way of putting all that together. Plus the story itself was pretty cool.
So, and it goes for the creep instead of the
much the more boot. Dread. Yeah. Instead of,
yeah. Boot. And it's a nice slow reveal and it just keeps hanging out. Like you can tell when, instead of just startling you, the camera just goes to what you're supposed to be facing and just looks at it for a while.
Yeah, which is, I think that takes some stones to do that, because it's much easier to kind of do the boogity, and it's not what it's doing, and it's just like, oh, that's a thing. And then culturally too, like, you know, if you live in many parts of this country, you're reaping the benefits of deteriorating infrastructure. And we've had a couple of things here a couple of years ago, or maybe a few years back. We had a thing where there was some problem at the water something, and they're like, yeah, your water's gonna smell like something weird, and don't just boil it or whatever. And it was like a couple few days of that, of like you can't drink water, and it's like, I'm an American, damn you. Like, you know, it turned into like a I need to talk to your manager kind of person. Like, I can't be sussed with, I expect water to always be available to me. I'm American. And it's
good as a chicken in every pot if I have nothing with which to boil it.
But what was interesting was that, like, you know, I saw the news alerts on my phone, so this or that, but it's like, you know, where I am in Texas, like, it's Austin and surrounding area and hill country, and it's pretty, you know, diverse and progressive, and people are pretty connected and all that kind of stuff, whatever. But you go 45 minutes west or east, and it gets a little ruraler, and it's sort of like, maybe the people are just like not on the pulse of everything happening every given second. And it's like, and I just kept thinking, like, in this scenario, like, we don't have anything worth a damn that's like, so I mean, like, you could just be out there drinking water like crazy, and all of a sudden you've got the funky butt for like a week or whatever. And it's like, I don't know. It's just, it's one of those things where I kept thinking with this, it's sort of like, oh, well, this like beautiful, very fancy, obviously, you know, very modern kind of thing, and this, all this kind of stuff. And it's like, yeah, but so, I mean, you know, it's like, no matter where you are in any kind of developed area, anywhere, you are always going to be beholden to the infrastructure itself. And if the infrastructure goes tweaky, then it's like, and you're gonna have a bad afternoon. And so I thought that was interesting, kind of a thing too, that culturally it kind of becomes a little more universal than what you'd expect.
Tell me if you can, when she pulled up in that little like Jetsons looking taxi, at first I assumed that meant that this was a sci-fi, you know, like a little bit in the future, a couple years, but then if it's a Korean movie, they are just kind of in the future a couple of years. So, like, do they just have them?
That's a good question, because, like, I've run into that a few times where I've watched something where they're set wherever else, and you see some car, and you're like, what is that? And there's like, yeah, that's just a Pongyang Bingadink, and you're like, huh. Like, I didn't know that was a thing. And like, and yeah, like, it's 90 miles to the gallon and it'll blow you. And you're like, why don't we have that here? Like, oh, we have to have a Ford F-950 with truck nuts. Like, oh, okay. Yeah. So yeah, it might very well just be a normal car, Josh.
Yeah. If it's a really small fuel efficient car and it looks funky, it's probably just really successful everywhere but where we live.
Yeah. So, yeah, pretty much.
I saw a side by side of like most popular car in, like, you know, Europe versus most popular vehicle in America, and it's like the European one is just a little like tiny little four-door EV thing, and then it's like, yeah, like a double axle dually fucking pickup truck from America, like a F-250 or some shit. And you're just like, and you see that all the time driving around in our suburban neighborhoods, of just like, what the fuck, dude? Like, this is just
makes
silly.
Me think of Muppets Most Wanted. Like, dude crammed into the car with his ears up by his knees up by his ears, and it's like, of course, you know, that it is no longer legal to sell this car because of its ridiculous huge size. More people should see that movie. Yeah. Anyway, speaking of movies that people should probably see, let's talk about Infested. I did pause it at the beginning of this movie when the spider started spidering, that a single big spider like Sting is not scary, because kind of like with a slasher, what's scary about a spider is you don't know where it is.
Right.
And it could be anywhere. And so they play with that for a while. But then after a while, we turn from Alien to Aliens and make that full switch where...
I thought that was the savviest comparison I'd heard in a while.
The problem is not for these people that you don't know where the spider is. The problem is that everywhere is where the spider is. So like, just once you have the whole building is basically just a spider's nest with delusions of apartments. You know, and once you hit that stage, then you just get to go nuts with it, and that's super fun too.
Well, and then also too, they really do, there's a lot of assuredness. Like, this is this dude's first feature. He'd done shorts prior to this, but like what I love with this too is the structure, because like at the beginning you have the guys in the desert, you're doing kind of truffle hunting but for spiders kind of a thing, and then you go like oh okay, so this thing, it's going to be like arachnophobia, where it's sort of like the thing smuggles itself in and then gets busy with the local spider population. And then, you know, we get arachnophobia, which is great. Arachnophobia rules.
Yeah.
Like, okay, cool. That's what we're going to do. But then as you hit the third act, you go, you realize like, no, it's not that. And you're like, huh? Well, it's a thing. It's like a planned, controlled sort of a Jesus. Like, wow. And that was fascinating. I thought that was super interesting, because like it was very political without being politically noisy, I guess.
It just is meaner without belaboring the idea. Like as soon as you get like the, oh, they're specifically looking for these spiders. Not like just accidentally one crawls into a banana crate. And then the fact that like when one dude gets bit, no one cares until it's time to pack up and go. And then they finish him off. And you're like, oh, these are just people that give no fucks. Like we're watching something bad happen from the top down. And then as the movie gradually explores that in the background, that's kind of fascinating. But I think, and at least to me, the first half of the movie is a little more interesting than the second half, again, because the idea of a bajillion tiny spiders and not knowing where they are, I do think is scarier. Although it is really fun to watch like the spider square off with a Volkswagen or whatever. Yeah.
It also gives us the all the baby spiders just swarming the guy's arm,
which is just horrifying. Yeah. And to me, like that's like the most squick inducing part of the movie. Like I'm sure, like ourselves as well as anyone listening, like at some point you've been tasked with either killing or eliminating a spider from a situation in life by someone else who will not. And there are two screams. The first is the discovery of the spider. And the second scream is when you go to grab it and it accidentally falls to the floor behind something. And that's a much longer protracted scream, because the unknown has been introduced into the spider equation. And this movie knows that. And they really lean into that for quite a while. I did have to turn the volume almost all the way off watching this in the sister is in the shower scene while the spider's running around the bathroom. Because amount of screaming and kill it, screaming, kill it. And I was like, this is spot on. I appreciate that the movie is ripped from the headlines movie, but it is so shrill and annoying that it's kind of getting under my skin after a few seconds. You're like, this is really, they're really letting this breathe. I was like, better. We're just going to kind of turn this down a little bit.
That's one of the first scenes where you see multiple spiders.
Oh yeah, it's a great scene. I just had to be like, "This is
the spider." They're like,
"This is giving me a headache." Like, no. We're so far beyond the spider.
I feel like they do have a little bit also of, you know, in addition to just these bad people who have done a bad thing and how the shit just rolls downhill. We have the folks in the apartment complex who are just kind of marginalized by the greater society. It seems like they're all, you know, it's kind of a poor neighborhood. There's a scene where they talk about calling an ambulance, like, you know how long it would take an ambulance to get here, like nobody's coming, they don't give a fuck about us. And it, yeah, so that
apparently
has
like
that
9981694, you know, 3 also is a joke. So
it just takes longer to say. Yeah, so it's got that attack the block kind of thing too, where it pulls in a bigger subject, and it makes us ask ourselves, really, who are the real spiders?
It's the crazy nut job conservative neighbor that assumes everyone's selling drugs.
But no, it's the spiders are still the spiders.
Oh, the spiders, the spiders, right. I forgot. This is a literal movie about spiders.
Well, that's the thing that's one of the things that I enjoyed with this is that, like, you have the two components of it until it kind of opens up in the third act, and you have the whole kind of militaristic kind of component. But, like, by and large, you have, like, humans humaning in very kind of very raw and kind of relatable ways, where you have people that, like, because of a misunderstanding, they go apart, or somebody who loses a family member, and then there's a little bit of reversion, and there's always, like, really good human concepts in here that are really, really, really super, super relatable, which is great. And then, but then you also just sort of have one of the things that I really enjoy, which is just sort of like nature naturing. Like, it's just, like, yeah. I kind of enjoy that, with this idea of where you just kind of, like, if you have something that is hyper aggressive, that type of a creature, like, it's not going to be like, oh, we're not so different, you and I. It's just going to be like, it's just like, nope. My job is to proliferate, and if you're going to prevent me from proliferating, then you are the enemy. Like, I mean, I always remember back home, Josh, with the javelina, where it's sort of like, if you were out walking in the woods, or you used to take our dog Daisy up on the trails, up in the national forest and stuff, if you came around a bunch of javelinas, you could be 5 feet from them and be
someone's going to have to tell me what a javelina is.
So a javelina is a giant, very large, some of them are gigantic, furry forest pig.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
yeah, big, like a boar.
They're kind of a big boar looking thing. And they're, some of them get to be pretty damn big. Yeah, but the thing about it is
get
they're
to know them.
They're,
I think,
really.
Warthog would be the closest comp.
Right. Yeah, like, kind of in that realm, like, just picture, yeah, just a picture.
I'm Googling, don't worry.
So, like, but the thing with javelina is that they have really terrible eyesight, and they're real stupid. So you could be 50 feet away, and it might think that you're threatening it. You could be 5 feet away, and it's just like, what's going on? And
so, like, the cutest little fellas.
Oh yes, yeah, they're adorable. But but it's one of those things where, you know, you could be in an open field and it would think that it's cornered, and right. It's like, you're a dumb motherfucker. And but at the same time, like, it's much like a lot of things in the desert Southwest, like with the Gila monster. Like, Gila monsters are fine, but if they decide they're gonna bite you, they got so much crap and bacteria and poison and yuck in their mouth that's how you die from them. Mm-hmm. And with javelina, it's a similar thing. Like,
this dude's got some serious teeth.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like they'll slash after you, and that's the thing, is that you'll get an instantaneous infection. So you have this open wound and infection that ordinarily, like, if you scraped it on a piece of metal, then you go to the hospital and you're fine. But, like, they got so much gunk and crap in their mouth and stuff. It's just really dangerous. And so anyway, like, it's one of those things where you just go, like, I am out in your neck of the woods, and so I'm going to give you a wide breadth and just sort of make sure you know that I'm not threatening you or your family, and then on the way we go. But if you're out in their neck of the woods, like, I mean, it's the same thing as, like, oh, they got attacked by a shark. Like, no, you impersonated a seal and he was hungry, you know, like, yeah. Or you know, anytime some dumb motherfucker goes up, like, what is a moose or something? And, like, do you not know that mooses are real fucking mean and dangerous? Like, stay the hell away from it. So when nature does, all that kind of stuff. And so anytime nature just does what nature does, it always makes me happy. I know it makes me sound kind of morbid, but I'm always kind of glad when nature gets one back. Because it's just so, like, in this scenario, it's like these, and there are certain spiders around the world, like, you know, was it the baboon spider and, like, the birdcatcher one and the other, like, that are just there as, you know, as long as your fucking forearm. And just, you know, several inches across, these gigantic things. And it's just like, if it thinks I'm threatening it, like, fair play to the spider, man. Like, that's fine. So I love that was they brought that in without it being like a, as much as I love arachnophobia, that one spider, like, I took it personally. Like, right. In this, it was more like these spiders just sort of like.
They never try to give it, like, personal, like, human morality or motivations. Mm-hmm. It's just spidering. like, mm-hmm. which is like any other animal, like shit out as many kids as possible, eat, defend yourself. That's kind of all anybody does.
Yeah, there's no malice, and the spiders don't shriek.
Yes, yeah, I hadn't really thought about that, but cool. Yeah, that is dope.
I think part of it is that they never come anywhere close to hurting them after they reach a certain size.
Yeah,
true.
Because there's two that get stepped on early on.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, nope. You watch somebody hold a lighter up to one and it doesn't like shriek and shrivel up. It just sits there.
Yeah.
It's like, what? You're all going to die here.
You know? I can outlast this.
Well, and it's also too like, well, and I don't know about you guys. Of course, you're, I don't know where your home is located exactly, Matt, but where Josh's is like, you know, it's a developed area, neighborhoods and whatever, but there's still like some.
Very nature. Similar, just I'm on the south side of the city. Yeah.
There's like a lot, there's nature around, you know, for sure. And like, but you know, I was watching this. Of course, I saw this last year at Fantastic Fest, and that was big fun in the theater because you hear people that definitely have a phobia of spiders.
Going, yeah,
you're like just freaking out, which is great. But I knew what I was expecting, and I was like, I'm watching this late at night like an idiot. And it was Sunday, and I was like, oh, the trash can's got to go out. Like, I'm not going to the fucking garage. Like, that is not happening. Because as I'm sitting here by myself watching this, and like you hear this little tiny spider voice over on the couch going, "Fuck yeah!" I'm like, oh great, they're inspired now. Like, oh, good.
There's something to be said too for despite occasionally being a little jaded or too cool for school for certain horror films, that going to see a movie about spiders or snakes with a live audience will always be a pretty fun experience, because inevitably there's one person who had to be talked into going there by saying it won't be so bad, and then they will find out they were wrong and lied to, and they will freak out the whole fucking time, and you can enjoy that even if you don't enjoy the movie. So, you know, bravo Infested for giving us a great movie to inflict upon someone that is not spiders.
It's creative for sure.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have a huge spider phobia, but I was certain that there were a couple of them on me at some point while I was watching the movie.
Oh, yes.
I'm just not a fan of little quick things that I can not keep track of. That's, I think, just biologically we're meant to not like shit we can't keep an eye on.
I feel like now I do owe my dad an apology for making fun of him for years. Because when we watched Arachnophobia, we watched it at home on, you know, VHS. And just all throughout the movie, he was jumping up and brushing off his back and his shoulders. And he'd be, ah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it turns out he is deathly afraid of spiders, which, you know, like I was 12. I didn't think
my dad was. At that point, that's hilarious. Yeah.
You know, for him to have a phobia like that, an arachnophobia. Like, and I knew immediately what to call it. So that was good.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, my memory with that one, Joshua, was that, and this is going to sound like I'm making it up. I'm absolutely not. So when I was, when that came out, like, was it 91, 92, somewhere in that ballpark?
It's early. Yeah.
Somewhere in there. So my parents were traveling for a trade show. My brother's with my grandparents. And either my grandmother, I don't know, usually I went with my grandmother, but in that particular instance, so that weekend, or maybe it was like split time or something, but my quote unquote uncle, not actual biological uncle, but my dad's oldest friend's Gene, he was living in Prescott at the time, but he lived way out into the forest area. Like, he was living in a cabin, basically. Like, it was a big cabin, like multiple bedrooms. It was pretty nice, but it was like up in the forest, like way the fuck out there. And it was PG-13, so he took me, and we went to go see Arachnophobia, and then went back to the national goddamn forest in the middle of the woods in this fucking cabin. And it was like everything creaks, everything's dusty, there's wood and things and stuff and whatever, and it's just sort of like I have this distinct memory of just being like, well, I'm going to get killed by spiders. That's how this is going to go. And like,
This is how I die.
Cause like, they're going to recognize that the second I go to sleep, they're going to crawl into my head, and that's going to be the end of it. And it's just like, and I have that, I don't remember fuck all else, but I remember that feeling. And it's sort of like, and so it's funny how that thing, that kind of stuff can just stay on you. And like, there's definitely moments in this that they really get, even if you don't have a strong spider thing, like, there's definitely moments in this where, you know, like the arm bit was the one, was one of the ones. Oh. And then the thing that gets me was the one fellow that's like, you know, like kind of working out in his apartment and like playing the loud music or whatever else. And like the bigger one kind of crawls up the window or the wall. And he sees it in the reflection. And yeah. He's like, oh, there's a thing. And it's like, but that's the thing about some of these big fuck off spiders is that, like, they are absolutely, they're super aggressive. They're like, oh, you want to make something of it? And it's like, yeah, so the idea of jumping at your face.
And do like, you even spin, bro?
And it's just like, draw. Yeah, they're like flexing with all, wait, six, eight, whatever the number of, I'm sorry, they're not spider racist, but eight, yeah. They go, but it's like that thing of like a jumping towards you when you're just like, I can't with the, and yeah, I got nowhere to go. And it's like, that is fucking terrifying. God sakes. So I don't know.
You even dig into that kind of urban legendy or scary stories to tell in the dark kind of feeling. As they, I'm thinking when they walk into the dark room and the lady sitting on the couch and not answering, but moving a little, like her head's twitching.
Yeah.
And then she's just a bag of spiders. She's
such
just
a bag of spiders.
Bag of spiders. Yeah. So this is just so sure-footed and so fun. And yet it still keeps you dialed into these characters and you have those funny moments like, the dude is just trying to sell sneakers and this dipshit is convinced that he's dealing drugs. And it all hangs together and all, it just feels very human, you know, like the very Anna and the Apocalypse and Attack the Block. But then the scares are top notch too. So.
Well, and that's the human part of it without getting so melodramatic, but it's still, I don't know about y'all, but like, I really kind of, as it really unfolded and as it sort of got into the final act, it was like, you know, there was definitely an all bets are off because you just kind of, people just drop on you like, damn, man, like, usually you have some innocent that makes it, you know, you're like, oh, some, that person's okay. And they're like, nope, they're fucking dead. And so that was like, that was a wild thing. But really that relationship with the brother and sister and another girl that was there, like there's some real human stuff there. So it's not, they don't get so melodramatic. We're like, oh my God, I hope they make it. More so of just being like a, just like this endurance-y thing, which you know, it was more emotional than sometimes some French type of things can be. And so I thought that was neat without it being so melodramatic that you're like, oh my God, cue the Diane Warren song or whatever. Like, it's not that, but it definitely has that kind of rawness and that sincere kind of emotion that just is not super French. And so that was interesting too.
She's super French. Super French. French.
She's super ambivalent. Ha ha. Ha
ha. But what I really like about this is it does take the opportunity to zag when it could zig. And that was something that Sting just didn't do. It just steadfastly did the thing you expected it to do. And I think the best example of that is at the end when our guy has made it through and we're looking at later, you know, like 6 months later when everyone's kind of recovering. He goes out into the woods and he looks down and there's a spider on his jacket. The scene you're expecting is he pulls it off, throws it down, stomps on it and says, God, I fucking hate spiders.
Right.
And walks off.
That's the 80s version. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's always, but through the whole movie, he's been a person who loves weird animals and insects to the, you know, which drives the tragedy of the plot. But he's not somebody who hates spiders. And after that whole thing, he doesn't. He just puts it on the palm of his hand and gently like puff of air to blow it back into its environment. I'm like, that is great. That's, I don't know why, but it really hit me that he didn't say like, fuck spiders. He doesn't hate spiders now. He's just the same character. He didn't turn into like the quippy 80s star just because he went through trauma, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I think that might be, I mean, you know, not to be Mr. Anti-American or whatever, but like that might just be because it's not American, because that feels more like an American sort of turn of being like some, you know, God bless him, God love him, but like some Bruce Campbell kind of turned to the camera, wink and nod, kind of a, it's like, fuck spiders. You know, well,
there is an amount of American appreciation of nature that is hung up on dominating nature. So,
right.
Yeah, that may be part of it as well.
Well, and the reflective
my nature. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and also the reflective part of that scene too is the two girls like watching the demolition of the building, and like mm-hmm. you know, without some big monologue, it's like, yeah, this idea of the you know, things will move forward whether you want them to or not, and it's sort of like, and I thought that was kind of poignant too, just this idea of like, you know, there can be a lot of loss or tragedy, or there can be a lot of these things that occur in such a way that you have really no say over them, and you just do the best you can possibly do to, you know, keep moving forward, for lack of a better way to say it. But they said all that without actually saying any words. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and you know, God bless them for that. I thought that was really dope that they just sort of let that kind of breathe a little bit. And it's just nice. Like, there's a lot of opportunities to be sanctimonious, and they just didn't do it.
By the way, how cool is that building though?
Yeah.
It yeah. seems like there are a couple of them face to face. Like, I wonder if they actually exist. But like, why would you design a building that way if it didn't exist already? But yeah, big round building with round like window facades, and it's cool and thing. Mm-hmm. It's very spidery. I don't know. So yeah, for this, like, I was pretty impressed with how many ways this could have not been that great and how many ways it was. So I would say to me, it is all of the legs of a spider plus an extra one for luck. I think it's a 9 out of 10 for me.
Nice. Yeah, I think I enjoyed this a little more than I expected to. And that, I think that's probably partly because having just watched Sting recently and, you know.
We were like, dude, so don't stand.
Not walking through thin fields of gold, yeah.
Yeah, but like having...
I like having, that Josh both just as quick as we possibly humanly could to dive on a joke.
And then I had to, my brain had to be like, was there a way we could have avoided this situation? No. Like, there's not. Is it amazing that we made it this far? Yes.
Yes.
But I think, yeah, I kind of went in with maybe a little bit of a meh because of having watched Sting recently, as opposed to like the potential to be impressed. And, you know, I might have gone in had I been thinking more about arachnophobia going in, because while it's mm-hmm. not played in the same amount of like bonkers silliness as arachnophobia, I think it's yeah. closer in its sort of, no, it doesn't, you don't need to do a lot to spiders to make people squeaky about them. Like, you can just kind of throw a bunch of spiders on the screen and it'll just kind of be awesome. And they did a good job of that. So, yeah, this was a ton of fun for being a weird creature feature that instead of, for the most part, you know, making the monster enormous, just kind of makes the monster multitudinous, which is neat. So, yeah, I like this a lot. I'll say 7.5 out of 10. We all know you're safe in from spiders in a shower. It's just the rules.
Yeah, because I don't like conditioner.
Right.
Especially if it has tea tree in it. I hate that.
Yeah.
Except the tarantulas who want to keep their hair glossy.
Yeah. It's L'Oreal and I'm an erected.
Maybe he's born with it. Maybe it's get it off me, get it off me.
oh, well played. God. Yeah, I enjoyed the shit out of this. I just like, I thought this is really, really enjoyable, and maybe it's the French sort of influence on the thing, but I like how there's moments that are tense and like suspenseful and whatever, but there's also like a little bit of humor to it, I feel like, to some degree, where like there's the bit where they're running away from that group of medium to large ones, and he's got that little crank light. He's like crank light. And then it like clicks off momentarily, and then they're like, oh, it's action time now, and then he cranks up again. They all just kind of go, like, ah, man, it's like freeze tag or whatever, like the game,
red light, green light.
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly. And it's like, I love that it, because they don't play it for a joke, but it is amusing.
It's inherently funny though.
Yeah, yeah. There's something inherently.
It's much funnier because they play it straight.
Yeah. I think that's what makes it kind of like there's something kind of funny about that part of it, and then but this is just myself, but I was, you know, when he's showing all the other tanks in his room and whatever else, and then once there starts to be the suggestion that there's something else going on or else, I love the idea of like all the little creatures and all the little tanks being like, being like, do you think we should tell him that there's like 10,000 of these fuckers in this building? Like, nah, I mean, he wouldn't believe us if we told him. And I don't know.
This is our best chance to get out of here, guys.
And then meanwhile, those little worm guys just like, worm. And like, shut up. You're talking out of your ass. Like, all right, worm yeah. joke, whatever. But it's like, so I just like those little bits of like levity a little bit, but this did not played for a joke, but there's still, there's a little bit of a release, you know, and I really admire that. So I just thought this was wonderfully crafted. Very, very cool. Very, just very, very enjoyable top to bottom. So it's, yeah, I'm gonna be up there with Joshua. I'm gonna say nine out of 10. 9 out of 10. If anything has taught you anything about anything, don't stick your head up. You move a ceiling panel and you're like, I should look around. Like, you've got a phone with a camera on it. Go clicky, clicky, flippy, flippy, and then see what you get. Because, like, you don't put your damn face up there. That's where your brain is.
Today I learned Charlie is smarter than me.
Like, I'm just kidding. Where the human brain is. God damn it. The single funniest thing in the reboot of Animaniacs is just randomly one point brain going, we don't really know what the effects of this will be on the human brain. And Pinky just goes, there's a human you? And, damn it, that's so funny.
Yeah, that's so good.
That's awesome.
Anyway, we will then take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about this other stuff. So up next, we have The Stranger, or El Extranjero. This was filmed originally as 13 episodes of a series for Quibi. But if you remember Quibi, and nobody does, it was 10-minute-long episodes of things that were meant to be watched on your phone, with also the idea that you could rotate your phone, either portrait or landscape, and have it still fill the screen because they filmed it with two cameras.
Mm-hmm.
So that was Quibi, and then they discovered that people don't want to watch 10 minutes of a thing at a time on their phone. And they went away, and so this got recut into a film, and we watched it with our faces. And so Micah Monroe is fantastic in everything. She's just great. Dane DeHaan is terrible in everything.
From what do I know him?
He's in, Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets is my go-to, and that's actually one of my favorite movies, and it kind of annoys me that he's in it.
I did a show that was a parody of that without ever having seen it. I also did a Shakespearean version of Weekend at Bernie's, having never seen Weekend at Bernie's. So.
I mean, you're living a better life than the rest of us, but...
So I think of him...
He's a plank of fucking wood. He just,
I think of him from Cure for Wellness. And he has a kind of a role in that one Place Beyond the Pines that came out a while ago with Gosling in it. That's actually a pretty good movie, but he's in that, and he's been kind of in little bits and pieces of a lot of stuff. He was also in that god awful Life After Beth movie.
So far, we haven't named anything I've seen, so maybe I don't know that guy.
Wasn't he in Oppenheimer?
Haven't seen
He was.
Another guy. Yeah. Okay, because there's Anson Elgort and Dane DeHaan and what is he, like Adrian Ehrenbacher, bro?
Oh.
And they're all different unimpressive white dudes. I mean, that is the tagline for our show.
I was about to say.
Yeah. Think about
the name for Horseshoe Hot Dog.
Well, Josh hasn't seen it, but Matt, think of how really unbelievably incredible Caleb Landry Jones is in Dogman, and like drain like 92% out of that.
Yeah,
and that's kind of the roles this guy plays, pretty much.
Yeah. Okay.
So
he's the silicate packet that comes with the beef jerky.
Yeah.
Do not eat.
Given these ingredients. I don't know. I feel like we have the kind of XFL and like Long After Dark or whatever that Hulu series was phenomenon where if this was a movie worth watching, it would be a movie.
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of my feeling
too.
The
fact that it was on Quibi means that it couldn't get sold anywhere else.
Well, and also too, like the thing that gets me with this one, and I didn't take it so personally as I would have been as a younger person, I guess, but like I kept the thing that really got me with this was like, I, you know, without having to lean on the technology, but I kind of dug what they were doing with what this, you know, like this whole idea of like stalking people, or like having a particular people posting on social media and that having been like a target thing. That is a good idea.
The idea of the person calling Ubers and then killing them is fucking cool. That's a great concept.
Well, and like in using these kind of platforms that we all kind of in some capacity or other or tangentially have a lot of overlap with or whatever else, like that's a cool idea. Like all those things work. Taking somebody out of the area that they know into another area, that works too. And like, so like those are really cool ideas, but it's like very quickly you're like, okay, so I don't know about y'all, but it was like, okay, she came from Kansas, moved to LA to be a writer.
Which two on the nose, by the way.
Yeah. Like, okay, come on, pick it. There's 49 other states to pick from. Yeah. So it's like, okay, so there's that thing. But then very early on, unlike like a year next with Sharni Vincent and that one, where like they reveal that in a delicious way that she's maybe not somebody to be fucked with, in a wonderful way, and it's great. It's a fuck yeah, as Josh would say, kind of situation. And this one, it's like, oh, my daddy used to shoot guns. Like
before I became a vegan, it's like you can't play both sides of that.
It's like a single line. It just feels like LA douchebags like thought about Middle America. I was just like, it's like this is one of the many problems with this country. It's just sort of like, and it's just like, but that just like just sounded like a sack of meat hitting the concrete. It's just like, oh, come on, man. And then like, and then the straining of the credulity was strained like taffy, because it was like every single moment it was like this thing of like, you have the abusive cop and you have the, we don't believe what this lady's saying, and oh, that lady's holding a knife, whatever else. It's like, come the fuck on. Those cannot be your mechanisms for the story, damn it. So it's like early on, I was like, I'm giving this a lot of credit. And then after I'm going along, I'm like, no, man, you can't do those. Like, that's not, son of a gun.
Well, then we had the Indian dude at the 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
Who starts out equally as pushy and creepy as the guy who, you know, did the Dane DeHaan dude who was pushing her boundaries earlier that evening, right? And he's doing a subtle being controlling thing. And it's like, oh, maybe the idea is that everywhere she goes, she's going to encounter this. Or maybe it's that he's working together with the guy and she's never safe. Or like maybe it's the movie genuinely thought that he was charming.
Yeah, that took me some time to reconcile because I kept waiting for the reveal.
Yeah,
because like, I was this is going to be like in Texas Chainsaw. If you escape to the diner, you realize they're all in on it too. And yeah, like okay,
clearly he is not meant to be like
the good guy
that we relate to. Like nope,
the human.
Yeah, so there's that, and then we've got, for really no reason, our lady who picked up the guy has had a history of like sexual assault and was not believed and ended up denying it because she got kind of cowed into doing that. And that is a note that feels really sour as well. Cause
it's too important of a message to be delivered in this format.
Yeah,
well, like, and it's too weighty to be taken seriously in this context, or at least that's where I land on. Is like, I get what you're saying, but like, this isn't ringing as like this clarion call to action that you want it to be, movie, because it's in this dumbass 10-minute clip.
It's in the context of this guy who is utterly evil, and in a just kind of a pretty standard red pill kind of douchebag way.
Yeah. He's just like, but is also Reddit. Yeah.
But is also a fucking wizard. And he can be anywhere and do anything. And he can be Heath Ledger's Joker and dress like a cop and sneak into the cop place. And like any electronic he has total and utter control of. And it's weird. Yeah. And twice this week in our two remaining movies, I found myself wishing that I was being lied to in a way that usually pisses me off in movies. Because in this one,
I began to wonder,
they are kind of playing with the idea that maybe he's not real.
Yes.
And I was like, you know, that would make sense because he just kind of vanishes at random and he's always where she is and he can spy on her with any piece of technology. Like, you know what? I would be okay with revealing that he's not there. He's just
the omnipotent presence of
patriarchy, and you know that is on a woman's mind at all times, right?
Right.
Like, that might actually be clever. Oh no, he is real. Well, no, he's not. Then he's a fucking wizard. What is this?
Yeah, I think, and one of the things that with the whole Quibi thing, two things I know about Quibi. One, I didn't realize it was short for quick bites, which is why they got the name Quibi, which is dumb. And two, that Reno 911 revival for Quibi, that first episode of that is actually really good. Those are the two things I know. The other things, though, that I learned from watching this feels like, I think maybe Josh, you had said something about this earlier when we were discussing this, this weird thing where you're like, the format is being kind of created around, or this thing couldn't have been made in a movie, so they stuck it in this format. I wondered if it was more, we've got this format, we desperately need content. And so someone went, oh shit, this could be my break. And then went, what's big right now? 24. What if we made it 10 minute increments instead of an hour? And so I sat watching this, and the fact that all the little individual segments are labeled by like what time it is, does not help the argument that it's not trying to be 24, but also they aren't shot in anything approaching real time. So that doesn't matter. Like the fact that like you have one segment called 7 p.m., one segment called 8 p.m., one to 9 p.m., but sometimes like that entire chunk of time would be just driving, or they'd have a scene that runs across two segments that all happens in like, so it's like, there's no sense of urgency to the increments. So the idea that you tie them to a time is like weirdly disorienting. I don't remember, think I mentioned on the show here, but like I watched this as individual chunks because I thought that was interesting. So I watched like a few and then later watched a few more and then later watched a few more in the manner in which it was originally intended. The director's true vision. And
I'm holding out for the Snyder cut. He just gets to cut everyone now.
I'm going to get that Steelbook Zune and watch it. But you end up with this thing that's like trying to, I think, capitalize on a successful thing that's already really straining to hold up its gimmick, except then you're also going, I need it to fit this increasingly silly gimmick of this entire platform for content, which it seems like there's too many guardrails on this particular road they're trying to drive this plot down, and like none of them make any sense or help like a real story happen. And so like I you could just see the bones the whole time of like, I have to do this, I have to make sure there's a cliffhanger, you know, because in 10 minutes that's not a long time to watch something happen and then start to resolve and then have to have a twist again, like the, you know, Arabian Nights type problem of like never quite being able to land on a resolution. And so watching it in 10 minute increments, I started waiting for the twist in every 10 minutes. And that's a lot of anticipation to try to maintain without getting kind of frustrated with the gimmickiness of it. So yeah, it didn't help this thing or do me any favors to watch it in that regard.
Well, and the lady who developed this too, like, she's kind of a weird track record. Cause like she's been involved in developing some pretty cool stuff, but some of the coolest things, at least in my view, that she's done have been things that they're based on stuff like, you know, she was one of the people that developed The Killing. Hmm. And she developed, there's another one that was, The Lie, the one that came out about 6-7 years ago. Like she was involved in like that. That was from a German movie. And like, and then like, so Salt of the Sea was another one that she was involved with, but The Killing was kind of the main thing. And like, I fucking loved The Killing. I thought that was great. And I thought it was, you know, Mary Lannis is great in that. And like, it's just, there's a lot of really, especially the first season is fucking amazing. It's really good. But then you watch the original and you're like, oh, there's much more nuance and there's much more of this, whatever. And so I don't want to dog on this lady, but it was like, so when you watch this thing, I kind of go like, there's ideas in here that are good, but there's so much underbakedness that like, you know, this idea that only occurs in television movies, that like any law enforcement agency, the FBI or the cops or whoever, are going to just like bring in traumatized civilian into a scheme to be able to track down a bad guy, or you're gonna use him as bait, or you're gonna do this, or it was like only in television and movies, because for fuck's sake, like, you know, sort of.
Yeah, especially in the amount of time they wouldn't have finished even filling out the initial paperwork.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the amount of clearances and judges' orders and every fucking thing. I mean, this is like, so this idea that like that's putting your big mechanics in the third swing of this is just sort of like, and I don't. It sounds very mean to say, but it just feels like one of those things again where you wanted a mechanic to work and you didn't bother to really work on the meat of how that actually functions. And so it's sort of like, I do think there's good ideas here, but it's just like at every turn, as you say, like you don't, you almost wonder if he's not real, or if he's omnipotent or whatever, all this kind of stuff, or if he's like all the different people. That just comes from like really not working out the mechanics. And so it's sort of like, it's kind of painful that at no point, just because of a downed camera or a truck blocking your view or something, that he doesn't get derailed a little bit, because that would be a whole lot more interesting than just this constant popping and upping thing, unless you're doing something like The Voices, where you're going to be like, right, taking the entire reality and changing it. But that's not what she's doing in this story. The reality doesn't flip on its head, so we don't get that part of it. The only thing that was interesting, though, is you guys both kind of mentioned about the guy at the convenience store. I kind of took him, as it went along, he kind of became a lot more emo-faced and annoying. But early on, it was like I kind of took him as like awkward and sort of like harmless in a way, like at least initially. And then it was like as things kind of start spiraling out, I kind of kept thinking like, you know, if you get put into some crazy situation, like if you just have a human reaction of being like, I'm kind of pissed about being in this god awful situation, like, I kind of get that.
No, so that like, part I actually felt worked when he's just like, hey lady, you fucked me. Like, I'm kind of over you right now. Yeah, that part I thought lands the beginning, though, where he's like desperately trying to hit on her, and sure, she's like when he gives her a solution to the specific tech problem she asked for, he's like, well, you'd have to do this and this, you know, and she's like, well, I'm not going to fucking do that. And he kind of looks at her like, well, fuck you then, bitch. I was like, okay, that makes sense. Like, that kind of works. It's just him shamelessly hitting on her after seeing all this shit go down was the part that was a little like, come on, bud. Like,
I think it's because we're already on high alert with the Dane DeHaan character for, like, we're looking for.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Shitty behavior. Yeah. And I feel like we just get that from him a bit. Like, he's just a little bit too forward and a little bit too, like, so here's what you're going to do. You're going to go in here and you're going to do that. And like, fuck's sake.
Well, that's might be one of those things. If you had more space, time, and air to kind of build it out a little bit more, then maybe that doesn't kind of hit the same kind of way. Maybe it just plays totally different if you have just have more space. But as it stands, it's just, there's no extra space to breathe, you know?
And it's also very much that Dane DeHaan's character doesn't have an ethos, really. Like, he has a little bit of bullshit about telling me a story or whatever, but he doesn't like have a coherent shtick. It's like if you see a superhero that has Batman's cape and Superman's bright red undies and Cable's electric leg, and like, what is your thing, though?
Well, that's the closest he comes to motivation is just, I'm a sociopath, so I don't care. So I find this amusing. And also, I'm just kind of a misogynist, because he has that line about, like, you can't want equal rights, but then expect them to hold the door open for you or some insane shit. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just so I was like, oh, he's just a red pilled incel. Like, except he's also saying he doesn't have any kind of, he doesn't care about people. So he wouldn't be interested in sex because he's above all that. He's too smart for you. So it's like, you're just a dipshit. You're an internet guy that thinks he knows better and is frustrated that no one acknowledges his supremacy. And so you're killing people. And it's like, that's kind of boring. Like, maybe it's just that I don't know how long ago this came out. Must have been a little while since it's on Quibi, but like, maybe it's just that we've seen enough of that bullshit since that's not interesting. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was like cutting edge at the time. I don't know.
Yeah, there's that point of it too. And then, like, you know, there's also the thing of, like, once you see, and we've had this happen over the last couple of years, we've had some really neat experiences with some really cool stuff. Like, you get, you know, Spontaneous and Lisa Frankenstein, where you're like, see, you could be better. You can be big and you can be big ideas. And that's really wonderful. And it's like, so I was thinking with this one, the last thing I'll say on this thing, which was that I was thinking about that one from Chattanooga last year that I really liked, American Meltdown, where it was like they play around with this idea of like almost judging somebody or this lady for having, you know, kind of hitting a crossroads of kind of mistakes and issues and problems in her life. And then you introduce this other character and it's sort of like then her life kind of goes a little bit awry and like a little bit positive and good. But then it's like, well, maybe there's an alternative motive here and whatever. But at no point in there does it become hyper-realistic. At no point in there do they, like, kind of flip around in reality. They're just taking some human things that happen to humans, and then they're playing around with the idea of, like, who's the victim, who's the villain, like, what are the dynamics here? And it's like, so I kept thinking about that in relation to that movie, that one from last year from Chattanooga. I was like, think about that in relation to this, and being like, it's like, boy, howdy, if we could just had one more character. Like somebody attached to the earth, just some way to like give her moments of respite or stretch out the time or to give us a little bit of more space to work. Cause Mike is more than capable. I mean, she's a really talented actress. She's great. So like give her more to work with, for Pete's sakes. But as it stands, she almost plays more like a wordless comic where it's sort of like, just like it's shots and things and crafted well, looks had a lot of really cool looking shots, but it's just like there's not much beyond it, you know. And that's, you know, so I don't know who it was that I read. They were like, oh, this is really cool, and I was like, yeah, because I don't trust them now.
No, it definitely has that feeling of this was not enough of a thing to go anywhere else. So I take no joy in not enjoying it all that much. By the way, it does end with our villain getting eaten by wild coyotes.
Oh yeah, I love that in the daytime in LA.
The whole point was about that, but okay. Maybe it was deeply symbolic. I don't know.
It's always a bummer when you see the LA River and it reminds you that there's a better movie you've seen that also features the LA River.
Yeah, Grease. No,
fuck you.
Bad Boys, True Romance. Let's see. East of Eden, like, keep going.
I was gonna go Terminator 2, but fine, you guys.
Well, that works, yeah. That works.
No grief. All right, so for me, this is like a 3.5 out of 10. I'm just gonna watch Valerian again because at least that has really cool aliens in it.
Yeah, 3 out of 10. I forget what you guys said his name was, but our lead antagonist guy. I kept thinking he might be, my brain just bailed on the name. The, dude who played the clown in It.
Oh, Skarsgård.
Skarsgård. I was going to say he could have been like a Skarsgård cousin. I kind of kept having that idea in the back of my head while watching this. So
like, imagine if he were actually unnerving or chilling or threatening. You know, if you had a Skarsgård in the role, then, you know, it'd be creepy.
Yeah. And for all I know, this dude could have been amazing with a better script. You know, I think he just didn't have anything to work with, but.
Well, I mean, to be fair, like, you know, as much as I say, like, Micah needed one more character in there and they needed more space to breathe. Give this character some more space and give you some more misdirection. And all of a sudden it becomes more interesting when he looks up through his eyebrows. But if you just go from like, la-di-di to fuck women, like, he's just like, well, that's a bit of a switch. So yeah, I mean, it's a, you know, dumb platform, silly formatting, but in terms of a movie, you know, it's just sort of like, there's a lot of things that would make something like this really, really work, in a really kind of like lively way that just sort of makes it flat. And then, I mean, I'm beating a dead horse when I say this, I say this all the time, but just stop shooting shit in LA. Like, for the love of God, I'm so tired of it. Like, I just don't give a shit any longer. Like, it's not, it's just stopped being interesting a long fucking time ago. Like, it's not, I don't know. There's so many more interesting places and things and walks of life and backdrops and areas and just all kinds of other stuff. Like, challenge yourself to figure out a way to place it somewhere else than LA. For the love of God, I'm just so tired of looking at LA or these type of things. It's just, it's so lame. So it's like, I was like, oh, I want to hear a comedian talk about being a comedian for half an hour. Like, fucking shoot me twice. So, yeah, so 3 out of 10, shoot me twice.
Shoot me once, shame on you. Shoot me twice, shame on me. That's what I always say. Regardless of how many times you try to stop me from saying it. All right, so let's wrap it up with the tunnel, or El Tunnel. This is Australian feature. That involves some subway tunnels under Australia,
in
which there are perhaps some unhoused persons living and perhaps a creepy dude.
A boogan of some
sort. Supernatural question mark thing. Vampire? Sorry,
yeah, vampire? I was thinking like kind of a chuddy thing.
Yeah. I mean, anything that reminds me of Chud is usually pretty good. That's why City Slickers is great. Honestly, I think there's an okay movie in here. I think this is completely shoots itself in the foot by constantly cutting back to the two survivors having survived giving video interviews.
Yeah, I think it was a weird choice.
Real hard to have any tension when you know who lives. And who dies?
Hell House LLC, based on, you know, Carmichael Manor Bloodlines, the third.
Where it's like, bruh. Like, I mean, this is the problem I had with, like, there's a few movies that came out in the 90s. Like, I think maybe My Girl, and like, there's one with like a river where someone drowns or something like that. And it's like all these adults talking about things that happened to them as kids. And it's like, well, the one that ain't there is clearly the one that dies, and clearly everybody else survived. So you can't put these kids in peril if the adults are relating the story of that time they were in peril, because we know they're fine. Like, what the fuck? So, I kind of went, oh, I bet if you did, you know, your machete cut of this and just took all that interview shit out and then maybe put a little bit of it right at the end after we've gotten the reveal, then this would probably work pretty well. Might not be like a, you know, blow the roof off the thing hit, but it would, I think, at least be allowed to kind of breathe and have its own tension. And like, you need little breaks from tension in a movie, but this was too many and for way too long. So that was my big impression.
Yeah. This is the second movie this week that I wanted to be lied to. And for this one, I wanted the Descent ending.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I don't know why I want this, but I do.
It is weird.
If they had had that last interview and then cut to her in the tunnel holding the dying guy.
And or just his this head.
Completely bonked out expression on her face going, that's the documentary we're going to make when we get out of this. Yeah. We're going to get out of this. That's the documentary we're going to make when we get out of this. And like, I really wanted all the documentary segments to only have been in her head, and we've never seen that really done before. Mm-hmm. And that would be super cool. But no, it's just, this is a documentary about these guys who explore a tunnel that has evil things in it. Like, the setting is amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a huge underground lake in the middle of a subway tunnel. There's all this really cool, creepy shit down there. And then when the thing is busily just whooshing people off of the screen, that's fantastic too. Yeah. And even the scene where he's like doing the slow motion kind of come towards you thing, and then, you know, like very slowly breaking a dude's neck, that is brilliant. Like, it's so great. But then it's like, dude breaks the neck, and then you cut to when they broke Bob's neck. That's when I knew that we were really in trouble. Yes, they were in trouble and they broke Bob's neck. It's not quite as bad as Carmichael Manor,
but it's
based
bad.
On the novel Push, because they did the whole, don't go in there because there will be a guy in there. And then I told her not to go in there because there would be a guy in there on the talking heads thing.
Yeah, that's
and true. Then back to the scene where she goes in there and there's a guy in there. And he's like, you're doing everything three times.
You laid that out really well, Joshua. And I was thinking about, I haven't watched the whole thing yet, but I watched about half of the documentary about this. So far, I've only got a chance, I don't have time ever. So I watched about half of it. And what I found interesting for the documentary, I didn't really know this because I think of a lot of exploitation and, you know, exploitation kind of movies and stuff. And I think of all those kinds of things. But the guys kind of talk about at the time in Australia that it was like there was a lot of emphasis on, on a lot of very, very indie drama-y kind of movies and very art house kind of things and kind of award kind of things and, you know, that kind of stuff. And like, there wasn't a lot of airspace and airtime for kind of genre movies and like kind of horror movies and things. Like, this wasn't really what was getting the money. And it's like, it's not like it is in a lot of other areas of the world where like you can kind of go rustle some things up, like a lot more, I guess, underground, not to have a pun. And so I thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking about it, and like if you think about like found footage things, which I know is always a hard sell for me anyway, but mm-hmm. like you think about found footage things, you think back 10 years, 20 years, whatever, you got to go back and think about how they were being done. There was definitely a certain way that they were done here and the way they were done in Western Europe that like is a few steps beyond this. Like if this was a thing where this was being made and there was a lot more of that stuff to draw from, maybe they don't do that thing where they kind of undercut all the suspense with like showing the people that survive. They would have worked out the mechanics a little bit better, but it almost feels as though like they're like a little bit in uncharted territory in their own market, you know, where they just kind of were like, and so like, it's not an excuse because it's absolutely a valid thing that like, it does just draw it away from, you know, kind of like keeping your butt puckered or whatever. So yeah, I mean, it's like, but I was thinking about that in terms of how they developed this or what they were making or how they were doing it. And like how, you know, maybe there was just a, and I mean this affectionately, but like ability to only see so far in terms of the overall shape of it. And then at a certain point, they're like, we just got to go make our fucking movie. Like they really can't even say that guerrilla DIY thing. They're like, we're just going to fucking make it and we're going to do it. And I thought that, and so it's like, so I kind of thought about that. I was just like, well, okay. So maybe you look back on it and you go like, if I had this to do again, I would maybe reposition these things or make the talking head sequences be people that knew them or a friend or somebody that, you know, like the way they do like cold case file TV shows and stuff like that, you know, unsolved
or
mysteries
just
and things.
As a denouement at the end or something, like, I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, I think that's, there's, you know, like you said, maybe not excuses, but like a reason. So,
yeah, there were moments that did squeak me the fuck out, though. Like when you are watching that thing, kind of, you know, Silent Hill nurse its way behind the guy. I'm like, yeah.
Well, but I think that's why it's so frustrating, is because it does start to hook you, and then you get, it just shoots itself in the foot. Like if it didn't work at all, this would just be kind of a dial tone, you know. But the fact that you're like, no, you know how to craft a scare, like you know how to add tension, you know, like it. There's a good movie here, you know, like it's just the conceit ruins it. And so, yeah, that I think is why I'm harping on it.
I'm just wondering if this is how all of my high school teachers felt. That it's worse because you're not living up to potential. Like if you just sucked, then they wouldn't care and would let you fail. But yeah, this is it's definitely not living up to its full potential. It's not really applying itself. I would see something else that these folks do, because I think they know how to put together a movie, and this must have been just a nightmare to shoot.
Oh, dude. God, yeah. Jesus, yeah. Like,
there's never a moment where you feel like they're in front of a green screen, right? It is very immediate when we're in it. So, like, I can't be too mad at it. I can't be too glad at it either. So for me, it's like a 6 out of 10. Night Swimming deserves a quiet subway tunnel.
That's a great song. I'll go 5, but a 5 of like, hopefully that's just enough momentum to get into a cool further movie from the same folk. And also a reminder that potential is what you see in people, and what's in front of you isn't good enough. So it's an insult. yeah, five.
Yeah, I think I'll be closer to Josh's spot. I think there's enough in the parts that really, really click that just like I feel kind of uncomfortable. So I was like, okay, well, that's well done. Also, hats off to them for making the female lead not just so impenetrably shrill that sure. You're just sort of like, because so often you have the ladder climbing female character who's just written in such a way that you're just like, God, it's just so terrible. And she's just not written that way. And so I give him a lot of credit for not having that be like almost like a, not sexist, but just sort of like a crutchy thing that happens oftentimes where you have like, oh, ambitious woman, like she must be the worst. And it's just not that, you know? So I really give him a lot of credit for that for sure. And God bless them for venturing down into the underground to make this movie. So yeah, I'm gonna call it 6 out of 10. The term gray water has got to be up there with like moist, and for Conlon, he hates anything with like tummy, yummy, anything that sounds like that. And really? It's like the word, the term gray water. It's just like you hear that, you just go, oh. So that out of 10. Oh God!
I used to think that didn't sound so bad when they explained, like, no, it's like the water that goes down the kitchen drain and the like the shower drains and stuff. And then I thought, wait, I pee in the shower like every time I'm in the shower.
And regardless, it's like the water still runs between your butt cheeks, so it's taint water.
It's taint water. Then what is it?
It's ain't believe it's not butter. No, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with our next things and then we'll be done. So next week we have a kind of a grab bag of stuff that we've just kind of has come across our radar. I wanted to watch El Conde on Netflix. It is an Argentinian film that imagines if the brutal real life dictator Augusto Pinochet was an immortal vampire. So why the fuck not? Then we're going to watch Baghead on Shudder that has potential to either thrill us or break us. And also Lords of Misrule has had some really great buzz, and that's on Hulu. So we're going to check that out. All three of us have watched Abigail. So on a night when it's not 12:30 in the morning, we will probably talk about that as a bonus. If you have a chance, if it's still in the theater near you, go fucking see it.
Yeah.
Give them your money.
Spoilers. We like it.
Yeah. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
And on that, I say good night.
And we will have a short for next week. I'm going to join the internet bandwagon and say we'll watch The Spider, which you may have seen floating around depending on what internet circles you fly in, or I guess web crawl in. Ha, Spider! I will also say, I know I've been pimping the Slaughterhouse Princess Discord the last couple episodes, and this last week, a listener named Justin joined and has been chatting with us, and that's been lovely. So, Troy, you're wrong. Everything works the way I intend it to, and the internet bows to my will. And with that said, if you want to join that conversation, you yourself can do a little sleuthing and find out how to get there by, I don't know, maybe listening to an episode of Slaughterhouse Princess and joining us in the Discord, where we talk about things like Japanese umbrella theft and movies. And as far as y'all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
So when you said the thing about make the internet bend to your will, I just had that thing, when you hear that sound from pop-up video, when it bloop, 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 that little thing where they would have little factoids, and I had the little bloop, bloop, bloop in my brain, and it's like, and it's just like, it's like trivia fact. Matt refers to his penis as my will.
Like, I thought you were going to say, like, Matt, the internet will bend to my will. Bloop, bloop, bloop. Asterisk, internet does not actually bend to Matt's will.
It's like, pop-up video. This is trying to
unlock. Don't goes on too long.
Yeah, it's like, fuck it. God, it's a rat's nest on fire in my brain. This is Charlie down in Austin. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. I will be heading out of town. I'm going to Milwaukee Metal Festival to be screamed at for a few days, and I can't wait. When I get back, if I survive the plane ride, then I'll let you know all about it. But in the meantime, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, be good, and then we'll talk to you before you know it. We'll see you later. Bye-bye. Well, and it's interesting, too, because there's two different Australian comedians that I really like, and I can't think of either one of their names.
Nicole Kidman.
No.
I laugh every time I see those AMC commercials.
I can't think of who it is, but there's one of them, and I think Angelica something or other, but she has one of the, so there's two Australian accents. There's like the one that's like the up one, and it's just like bingity bingity bingity, bangity bangity bangity, clutter clutter clutter, all up here, all kind of wing.
The and then the other one, which like is like the New Zealand one.
Yeah, then the other one is more like doy, doy, two, two, sing, boom, and it's like way the just out there, like barracuda face. Like,
the accent itself is a shirtless beer belly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like if you would like point, and it would just be like it's a guy with a hat with a bunch of corks on it. And you're like, what is going on around here? But it's like there's like two. There's only two. There's one or the other one. It's like
that's true.
Male, female, old, young, doesn't matter. You can have a 3-year-old that has the doy, kipi, kipogi, you know, that kind of thing. It doesn't matter.
And neither one seems appropriate to be like teaching elementary school or working as a bank teller. So
yeah, scare the shit out of those first graders.
Yeah.
I want to see a movie where a diabolical villain is from New Zealand.
That would be wild, actually.
Well, you know, we're just gonna kill you at 7.
Or maybe all right. 6. Yep. Gonna just have a little murder then?
Exactly. Yeah, you can never have a Bond villain like that. Like it's like, hey, gonna take just over, James.
Yeah, that's true. It's this weird rising inflection until eventually a glass shatters somewhere.
I just can't picture Taika Waititi like yelling at someone, right? I'm sure he does, but
I bet he just looks really disappointed.